I knocked on the door and there's this woman stood there.
Hold on, what door?
Sarah Jane's house, number 13.
Andrea's?
What?
Who's Sarah Jane?
Okay, you can stop it now. It's freaking me out.
I'm just not getting you. Sarah Jane?
Sarah Jane Smith, our neighbour.
There's no one on this road called Sarah Jane, not that I've met anyway.
Of course you have. Stop it.
Welcome to the 17th episode of Zero Hour Strikes, the show that covers DC's 1994 crossover event, Zero Hour Crisis in Time. Every issue, every tie-in, every zero issue. I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bass.
And in this episode, we take a look at the Justice League titles. That would be Justice League America, number 92, Justice League Task Force, number 16, and Justice League International, number 68. It's all one story called Return of the Hero. Bass, last time we talked about the Justice League, we were at, I think, at the height of the Bwahaha era. Did you miss that vibe here?
Yeah. We're not exactly at the same place right now. Whole new team.
We've seen this all over the DC Universe at this point. The Titans, the Outsiders, every team is sort of like breaking up.
Either they feel like they don't know each other, which is the case here with this Justice League, or they just don't get along, or they have these weird unresolved issues. But there's a lot of tension within the teams right now in the DC Universe during Zero Hour.
Because we're heading to a reset. And the idea is, I guess, we want to launch some new number zeros, new zero issues, relaunch the titles. So maybe we want, like with teams, the way you revamp a team is to change the membership. It just feels very strange that across the entire DC Universe, teams are just collapsing. At the same time.
And the only team that didn't really collapse, well, they got killed off. So the Justice Society is...
The Justice Society,
Everybody's in trouble. Everybody's in trouble.
So let's talk a bit about where the Justice League was in 1994. The Giffen-DeMatteis era had indeed propelled the brand to exciting heights. We ourselves covered the edition of Justice League Europe. Suddenly there were two books following Invasion. And 5 years later, at this point, there are four Justice League books. Justice League International had become Justice League America. Europe had become Justice League International. And now there was Justice League Task Force, which was about secret UN-sanctioned missions using Justice Leaguers and guest stars. And there was also the giant-sized Justice League Quarterly. I think there's like an issue that came out that month, and then there was just another issue of that, and it was over. Like, the brand was obviously thriving, but the quality took a sharp drop, like within a year and a half from this point, really. Bwahaha ended in 1992. There was a brief run by Dan Jurgens on JLA that provides some good action stories. But since issue 78, like now we're at 92, since issue 78, the book was stuck with Dan Vado writing and Kevin West penciling, and it was not good. I'm sorry, guys. The worst thing about it was Booster's bulky armor. We saw it in Zero Hour.
Yeah.
But generally, there was just nothing exciting about the threats they faced or any of the soap opera elements. I quit a few issues into it. So I haven't let's take us back in time to that point. I hadn't read Justice League for, I think, 14 months, maybe, something like that. And at this exact point, Ice had just died and many other members left to contemplate their future. And that's across the board, whether that's America or International, the whole team. Like, what we'll see here is what's left of both teams, essentially.
Okay.
So Justice League International, which used to be Europe, was not doing any better under a writer who shall not be named and penciler Anthony Williams. The team had moved into a haunted castle in England. Everyone had changed their costumes. You know, a terrible Power Girl costume, for example.
Oh my, yeah.
Terrible costumes. And after 14 months of this is the last issue. We're going to cover the last issue. To be replaced by something else in 0 months, just you wait. But both series, America and International, those writers are just switching books, and it's not going to help Justice League fans get through the next 2 years before Grant Morrison's JLA, which I think is really a revival of the franchise at that point, because that would mean like more than 3 years of substandard stories for the Justice League, in my opinion. So it really leaves Justice League Task Force as the better title at this point, but mainly because each storyline has like a different creative team. So you might get ups and downs, but at least that means you get ups.
Yeah, at least you get entertained.
Justice League does Mission Impossible, though we won't feel that here because it's part of that one story. They just like told it across three books. So it doesn't have that Justice League Task Force flavor.
Okay.
That said, we're lucky because Christopher Priest wrote Return of the Hero, not the regular Justice League writers. So it might be a bit better.
We'll see.
Let's just get into it and we'll talk about each chapter consecutively. Justice League America number 92 by Christopher Priest, Luke Ross, and a bunch of inkers. It's called The Program. Here's how it goes. The original Justice League of America has been assembled to fight Plasma Men in Washington, D.C., but it's just a smokescreen for mysterious aliens who want to mine Earth's electromagnetic field dry. Assembled by who? Well, by Triumph, the hero who figured all this out and needed a team to fight the aliens. The Justice Leaguers, Aquaman, Flash, Green Lantern, Black Canary, the Martian Manhunter, and Superman, are very green and almost die, and when they choose to save each other's lives over fighting the threat, Triumph takes matters into his own hands and fires all of his electromagnetic power into the alien's mining rig, and the space-time component of its engine overloads, sending him, and possibly them being the aliens, to the future. Triumph is telling the story to what's left of the Justice League, Elongated Man, Crimson Fox, Fire, Tasmanian Devil, and Elrond in Despero's body, pretty disappointed that the big guns are no longer part of the team because he's sure the aliens will be in this era ready to start again. But this is the League now, and they're not interested. So in other words, this takes place at the start of the League, and it is revealed, whether it's Zero Hour Magic or not, that Triumph, a hero we've never heard of, built the Justice League, founded the Justice League, and then immediately disappeared. Thoughts?
Well, that's a nice what if or Elseworlds type thing, but I when you go back and you change something as important as the Justice League, I mean, it took balls.
I mean, what's interesting about it in a way is that, and as we'll see through the way it's told, it did happen. You know, it's not like, oh, this is Alpha Centauri, and it's like an alternate version who's going to disappear at the end of Zero Hour. Triumph sticks around. It's like this actually happened and everybody forgot about it because of the time anomaly, not of Zero Hour, but created by the alien ship explosion.
Yeah.
He's the hero you've never heard of that's been a founding member of the Justice League. That's the concept. And he's kind of a jerk, Bass.
Well, yeah. He's not the usual Justice League leader, you know. Even Batman feels nice compared to this guy. I mean, he prefer superheroes die than trying to figure out solutions, you know. What kind of a team leader takes the matters into his own hands and, you know, does something foolish like he did? Like, I mean, it's a nice effect on the page, but everybody around him was like, what the hell's going on? What are you doing? Triumph is, he probably chose his name.
Well, he did, and we see it. It's a confusing moment. And I mean, when there are a lot of inkers on a book, I say, okay, this is kind of a rush job. Immediately, you can tell. It's like they're up against the wall. We need something quick, and we don't have it yet. So a lot of inkers, that's a problem. But there's a problem in the storytelling as well. I think there's a lack of proper editing throughout these three issues, where there's a lot of little bugs or things that are not clear or things that contradict one another, even though it's the same writer across the board. So there shouldn't be a discrepancy, but there is. And this is the bit where it kind of falls apart in terms of quality checking is it's in this issue. It's the page with Superman on it. So page 19, okay?
Okay.
On page 19, the top of the page is just eyes. And you have a feeling that that's supposed to be Superman because the eyebrows are dark. But at the same time, the thoughts should be Triumph's because he's thinking, oh, Triumph, that should be my name. Every hero needs a real win, a triumph. And then it says, say, now there's an idea. So in other words, he's naming himself, but the way it's pictured, it looks like it's Superman thinking of this. Maybe it is, because earlier, Martian Manhunter calls him Triumph, like he's been called Triumph all along. this is just a confusing moment to me. Does it mean that it's Superman thinking this? And if it's Superman thinking this, what does it mean? Why is he thinking this? So there are a lot of moments like this. I feel like, okay, there's a real rush job. That's true of the three issues where I'm wondering, why is this happening? Why, you know, why has this been being told this way? That's a common problem we've seen when with crossover events, because the crossover kind of disrupts the publishing schedule. And sometimes they cut corners to get the book out on the right date.
I mean, not only does it look like it's Superman's eyes, but it's just so confusing because Triumph is in this moment where he's like charging up or something. So everything's yellow around him. He's turning yellow. There are like red lines coming off of him. It's non sequitur. I mean, it doesn't go with what Superman is thinking next.
No, because here it is. I mean, everybody's kind of really early in their careers in this, which is one of the things I like about the issue.
Yeah.
But one of the thought balloons says every hero should total out an alien invasion first day on the job. But Superman is one of the ones that has more experience in the group. So this is not his first day on the job. It is Triumph's. So it's like somebody missed a memo somewhere and put Superman's eyes there, thought it was Superman when it wasn't supposed to be. We should see more charging up. We should see like a total yellow glow in that panel, and then we'd know it's Triumph. That said, like I said, one of the things I do like is that Priest gets to write the Justice League, the proper Justice League, the original Justice League, as rookies. And there's a lot weighing on them. They're thinking, he puts a lot of thoughts in their heads. They're thinking about responsibility. They're thinking about Green Lantern has this big weapon on his finger, and he's still struggling with what that means. Can he bear that burden? And they're all having these sorts of thoughts. So it's really cool to see these legends so early in their career that they're questioning everything. And like, they're making a lot of mistakes. You know, Black Canary screams while everybody's got their earbuds in, and you know, she deafens everyone. You know, the moments like that. But what they don't have in terms of experience, they more to make up for in terms of courage and valor and helping each other out. And, you know, so I feel like they're making mistakes, but they'd never give up. They don't give up on one another, and they don't give up on the mission. But Triumph is so impatient that, you know, he even knocks out the Martian Manhunter because the Martian Manhunter is too careful, you know, for his tastes.
I think that is the exact moment I started not liking Triumph. I mean, nobody sucker punches Martian Manhunter. I mean, what?
It's an extreme moment. What about that? It reminded me of Justice League Year One. In Justice League Year One, there's a thing where Aquaman speaks very softly because he's used to sound traveling further underwater.
Okay.
So outside of water, he's speaking very low to everyone. And they're all going, speak up. In this, there's a similar effect, but they've decided to give him an accent as if he, you know, he was raised in Atlantis or he's been living in Atlantis and he has an accent that kind of sounds Russian.
Yeah, they reference, you know, I thought maybe Dimitri or something like that.
Rather than Arthur, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool, though, that, you know, giving Aquaman that accent just meant that not everybody sounds like someone from the U.S. So
we can't tell, you know, on the page. It's like on Ohadmo or not. The girls sometimes ask me, what does he sound like? What does this character sound like? What's his voice like? And I'm always going like, how would I know? It's, you know, it's on paper, it's whatever.
Yeah.
But it's true that like if characters come from the West Coast, the East Coast, wherever they come from, they might have accents that until that character is in a movie or on a television show and they give them a way of speaking, an actor's voice is associated, then we don't know. Nobody knows a Batman's talking like this, you know, it's like, until somebody does it on screen.
Exactly.
So, Triumph is, of course, a bit of a sore point, but it's going to be a story. He's going to arc through these three issues, and eventually he goes on to a mini-series that tells his origin and a bit more. He's, what's the term I'm looking for? Under construction.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing, Triumph seems to be wearing hockey pads. So,
is he? Is that what that is?
I don't know. I just hate him right now. So, No. He has this cool yellow and blue suit, which kind of reminds you a bit of Dr. Fate or Booster Gold, or, you know, it's a classic type suit. two tones. It's good.
It also looks like someone else's costume, but I'm going to keep that to the end.
Okay, yeah.
It'll make more sense there. I think there are like a lot of bugs, like I said. I wish from the beginning, when we were in DC, it would be night. Because later on, when they're sort of in the upper atmosphere, it's like it doesn't make sense that the heroes are breathing. It just looks like they're in outer space. But if it were night all throughout the issue, then I would believe that it's just a strange quirk of perspective. That the alien spaceship, and I say spaceship, but it's like an energy oval floating up there, that maybe we don't understand where they are exactly in relation to the Earth. But they really make it seem like this is happening in orbit, part of it. And nobody's got a breathing apparatus. Like eventually some people pass out, but they're speaking. But otherwise, I mean, in terms of action, I think there are some good bits in here, you know?
Yeah. Actually, yeah, there are. There's a lot of action. There's a lot of movement. There's a lot. There's a lot.
A little bit 90s extreme. A little bit.
It's very much 90s extreme.
A little bit.
The only thing that it's only missing, I don't know, like a lot of pouches and spikes. And oh, yeah, no, Despero's in this. So don't worry. We have pouches and spikes.
Eventually. But seeing the old Justice League in there, I mean, it's all the classic costumes. It's all classic characters. So the fact that they're all, gritting their teeth and being involved in this sort of action, it's an odd mix, this is supposed to take place in the Silver Age in a way, and everybody's like screaming or doesn't have any pupils, including Black Canary, at a certain point when they're too far away. Otherwise they do have irises and pupils. It's not consistent in that way, but stuff like Green Lantern throwing up a spout of water into the sky that Aquaman can swim through to get to the alien spaceship, which is solid enough for the Flash to run on. Early teamwork from these guys.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there. I think my disdain for Triumph, just because he punched Martian Manhunter, kind of bent my appreciation a little bit.
I mean, he's also a jerk to the Justice League International when he gets to the future. And we don't actually see where this connects. It's just he just shows up at their door in New York, and that's what's left of the team, and he doesn't know anyone. We'll take care of it in the next issue, but he's not necessarily impressed by them. But you don't know them, dude. It's like you've missed a few years. Who knows if Tasmanian Devil isn't one of the best heroes around?
Yeah. Why should you think that?
You shouldn't.
Just because... No, he shouldn't.
There's no reason to think that, that Tasmanian Devil isn't like a badass.
Yeah. There's no reason to think that Crimson Fox isn't like the best Fox.
Yeah, the Batman of the group. You don't know.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on Justice League America before we move on?
It was an interesting read. I didn't care much for the reimagination of the creation of the Justice League, but I'll run with it. It's 0 hour. I mean, I'm up for anything. The art was okay, but inconsistent, not plot holes, but weird transitions and stuff like that. Final thoughts is, we'll see what happens in the second issue.
All right. Well, we'll take a small promo break, and when we come back, Justice League Task Force number 16.
So which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Doc who?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
We're back. We're looking at the second chapter of Return of the Hero, the most generic title for a thing ever. And Justice League Task Force number 16 is the second chapter. So it's by Christopher Priest, Greg LaRocque, and Rich Rankin. It's called Losers. Be careful what you name these things. All right. Triumph is so angry at what the Justice League has become that he brawls with the remaining members until Arion the Immortal shows up to stop them, kind of pissed off that he has to fend off dinosaurs in Central Park because of 0 hour. Fire races after the sorcerer to ask him to open a gateway to the underworld so she can find ice, but he refuses. The heroes then go to Washington, D.C. to intercept the aliens, though they don't really trust Triumph. He spends the whole trip complaining about the team being stuck, sharing cabs, flying on economy class, and generally being losers. It even infects Ralph, who's ready to call it quits mid-mission. Meanwhile, the Martian Manhunter finds Fire crying and hearing that this Triumph fella claims to have been an old friend, they both fly to DC to have it out. John does not remember this in the least, but is it a time anomaly? What is it? He knocks Triumph into the river, and just then, the aliens show up. A bit Marvelized, you know, there's a fight right away.
Yeah. It's hero versus hero.
A lot of padding. That's what I'm going to say. It's like we got this fight. It really takes forever. It's like page 14 before we actually go to DC. It's page 19 before the complaining gives way to some action. Let's say positive action or useful action, because hero fighting hero is not useful. So, and plus that element of Arion, and you got his old enemy, the demon Kaon, who is in this time frame running a deli.
Yeah.
We're not really sure why Arion needs to show up in this. And it's not even a 0 hour thing where it might be like the young Arion or anything. No, it's just right off his Arion the Immortal miniseries. Obviously, this is going to pay off in the last chapter, but it's still an odd moment to have when you've already got a lot of characters.
Well, I guess more is more. So
more is more, yeah.
Just throw everybody in there.
Yeah, and this one, I mean, Greg LaRocque, I've enjoyed him on Legion of Superheroes in the past, and his art did not look like this. So here, the inking is very 90s extreme. I feel like it's either he's changed his style or the inker is really smothering his work, but this looks a lot more 90s than anything he did like in Legion in the 80s.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I'm not a big connoisseur, but yeah, this is very, very, very 90s extreme.
It's Greg LaRocque, but he's been inked as if they wanted to turn him into Eric Larson. And of course, I was really intrigued by, in 0 hour, really intrigued is maybe overstating it, but when we saw shots of the Justice League in 0 hour itself, Despero was a member of the team. And I was going, what the heck's going on there? Because I hadn't been reading, obviously. So the thing is Elron, Manga Khan's robot, who joined the Justice League during the Bwahaha era as a sort of butler, sort of robotic butler. And foil for Oberon, you know. His consciousness is now in Despero's body, is the thing.
Oh, that's what that is.
Oh, you didn't think that there was enough references to it? I feel like there was a lot of the, you know, sometimes they're just catching you up. The new reader needs a little catch up and somebody will say a thing. Well, that Elron is inside Despero is, they say it like 3-4 times across 3 issues.
Oh, yeah.
In this issue alone, Fire reminds us that Ice just died like 4 times.
Oh, yeah. No, there's a lot of comebacks there. There's a lot of
recapping.
I think that's what it was. Wasn't sarcastic enough. I think my sarcasm didn't come through.
Okay, yeah. What is odd and a discontinuity and an editing problem in a way is that Triumph recognizes Despero as a Justice League, an old Justice League villain. Well, how?
Because Despero didn't look like that at the beginning, first.
Well, never
of all.
Mind. The Justice League is only a thing because Triumph put them together from that one mission and then he disappeared. So any Justice League villain, we can't remember any Justice League villain, right?
Yeah, that's right. He wasn't there.
It doesn't make sense.
Oh.
So what do you think of this first half of the issue? The fight between them and Arion showing up. What did you think of all this?
It's a lot of recaps. It's a lot of I think you hit it on the nose when you said it was Marvel-esque. Half the Avengers show up at the Fantastic Four Baxter building and fight breaks up. And we have everybody just trying to punch, I don't know, I'm going to say common sense into somebody. It just looks like action for action's sake.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it makes sense for like somebody like Ralph Dibny to decide, I'm going to punch it up. Because he does. I want to fight. It's like, Ralph Dibny, you want to fight?
Really?
You want to get into this brawl? What?
I don't know why they're fighting. And maybe it's because the plot is not really there. That's basically what I'm thinking. But then again, there's a lot of dialogue. They're catching up on dialogue. a lot. So
I feel like this was a 2-issue story, and they needed like extra chapter, and this is it. So we're gonna have some action at the top of it, some meaningless action. We're gonna have a special guest star for very little reason, although it will pay off. I don't think it was necessary. And then a little bit of a character interplay, and the characters really, they sort of want to quit the team basically at this point. Even the ones that are there are thinking of quitting the team, but will decide not to quit the team. So again, it's a zero-sum game where was this necessary? And then and then the aliens return, and Triumph is proven right that they're there, like in the last 2 pages. And all of this, like those first 2 pages and even the first couple pages are repeats in the other issues.
The same thing.
The same scenes, yeah. And we get re-explained everything every time. None of this is necessary. Like, this is the issue you could skip, basically.
It is, although I will say this. Martian Manhunter punches back in this one. And punches him through the steps at the Lincoln Memorial. So, you know, I kind of dug that.
Bit of revenge. What I like is, yeah, there are problems. Reason for fighting is a big problem. But once we're done with that, when they're at the airport, all of these little scenes, I think Christopher Priest is really good at doing some character work there. And even bringing some of the humor that we were used to in Wahaha, you know?
Yeah.
Ralph is calling Sue on the phone. It's all like, no, Sue, yes, Sue, yes. So you're just like, you know, he's checking in with the wife. You've got Tasmanian Devil, who tells here his origin story that was just a joke in a in a back page Who's Who entry, really. I don't know if they've ever really spoken it out loud in a story, but it's like a ridiculous origin. Even just Despero sitting there with a toque is completely ridiculous and completely Bwahaha era Justice League. So I'm glad he could like do a little bit of that, because yes, it is a ridiculous team that we're left with in many ways.
I don't think it's enough to redeem the entire comic, but you know, these couple pages are kind of fun. You get back to a more relaxed Justice League, and I must admit, Despero or Elrond, just with the toque and the big, I mean, it's funny.
Later on, it kind of gets in a territory where I always ask, like, do you know what you're saying here? You know, do you realize what you're saying? And if you do, Christopher Priest, who is just the guest writer on this, are you trying to tell the normal creative teams what you think of their work? Because you've got Ralph complaining about, it's almost metatextual. I don't know what we're about anymore, Fox, what the league means. It feels like mission after useless mission. I've spent months grinning in the background, mugging for the camera, keeping all of you entertained. Do you know how bad the comic has gotten? Are you telling us that you admit, you freely admit, that Justice League America sucks?
It does feel metatextual, and it does feel like a comment from the writer here. Big time. I mean, why else would he say these exact words?
It's pretty bad.
I mean,
and it's not going to change, because the writers are going to be the same in the next era, like the post-Zero Hour era, as the same writers, and it's going to be the same suck. And I was talking to Shag earlier today, and he told me it got even worse.
Oh, my.
So this is really the high point, like these issues by not the writers, even though there are a lot of problems with it in terms of it being a rush job. And again, I say that because there's like this, like for example, like this really bugged me. And it's when Martian Manhunter's coming back into town and he's going to find Fire. He's talking about an event that he fought Ray's, older Ray or whatever.
Yeah.
There's an editor's note that tells us where to find this. It's a story that happens in the Ray number 0. In other words, after 0 Hour. And it is not necessary. There's no reason, unless you're trying to sell the Ray and saying, oh, be sure to pick up the Ray if you're a Martian Manhunter fan, maybe. But what it's doing is, it's like something happened after 0 Hour that the Martian Manhunter has already experienced. If 0 Hour is the reset and there's like a distinct, even though it's less subtle, a distinct continuity difference, then things that happened after 0 Hour cannot have happened before 0 Hour. You know, time anomaly, what, I don't know. This can't happen. So this is the kind of stuff that really, really bugs me and tells me somebody's asleep at the switch across the board.
Yeah.
At this point.
Somebody's communications have dropped.
Because you don't need
significantly.
It. There's no need for this. Martian Manhunter can just fly back into town. He doesn't need to reference where he's been.
Yeah.
Bugs me.
It's a tough one to, you know, because I love the Justice League. I always loved the Justice League. You know, sometimes they're just tough to, you know, it's tough to love this. I mean, I was kind of excited. I was like, hey, we're going to do three Justice Leagues. But, you know, it's not a bummer. There's a lot of stuff I do like in there, but story-wise and storytelling-wise, especially, it's kind of clanky.
It's the best. It's really
the best we had.
These are the best issues in more than a year and for more than 2 years.
Oh my!
I'm sure of it. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's like some high points in there that I haven't read. But when I quit the books, it was much worse than this. And if Shag is right, and it just gets worse, and we'll see with the zero issues. With zero issues, we'll find out. Okay, is the direction good? Does this have promise now? We'll find out because we'll cover them. But oh my God, that's why I believe it is very rushed, because I can see the potential. If there had been another draft, if somebody had been a little more strict on the art and, you know, it's just like we just don't have time to fix these problems or to catch the problems. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to get it out and get it out fast because we don't have the time. That's the kind of stuff that a big crossover event like this one would cause. I mean, it is a rush thing all the time. I mean, it has to be resolved by a certain time. We know what the end game is. Everybody has to be on point. So if the inking's not on point, because we're still pushing through, because this part of this story has to be told, right? It's what it is.
And think of this. It's still in this era, there were four Justice League books. They were still riding the wave of the Justice League success in an earlier era. I don't think they deserve three or four books at this point, but they still have them. Very strange to me. It's like that IP became so strong that there's just nothing stopping it. And then Grant Morrison's going to revitalize it, and then there's going to be even more Justice League titles, more Justice League projects anyways.
It feels like it's trying to be like in the middle of classic Justice League and Bwahaha Justice League. And it fails. I mean, it fails. You can't be in the middle.
Let's look at Justice League International number 68, the final chapter of Return of the Hero. Still Christopher Priest writing. We got Phil Jimenez and John Stokes on art. So finally, some good art. Not a great cover, but it's not them. I don't know who did the cover. But the interiors, I have the best art of the three.
Oh, yeah, by far.
Oh, yeah, no. So while most of the team catch Martian Manhunter up and reveal the space-time rupture through which Triumph disappeared, wiped everyone's memories of him, okay, Triumph fights the aliens' plasma men. The League shows up to help. The Leaguers get their asses beat, and this group also chooses to save their colleagues rather than deal with the threat. But that now inspires him to be more of a team player. He uses his connection to Earth's electromagnetic field to establish contact with the aliens, which fight him as different Leaguers pulled from his memories. He realizes that all he's done is fight, so that's how they think we communicate. Just as he's making headway, Ralph returns ready to work with the team again and almost screws everything up, but then Triumph makes the aliens understand that their operation is killing the Earth and they leave. Easy as that. Fire returns to Arion, who tells her Ice is at peace and to leave it at that. Not that he can speak to the dead, so he can't know, but it convinces Fire. The Martian Manhunter welcomes Triumph to the team, and they agree they should rebuild the League. But then Zero Hour hits with the curse of the White Page. Here's my question, unrelated to what happens in the issue, Bess. Let's see if you can tell me. We saw all these heroes in Zero Hour itself. They were in the big crowd scene, you know, spending hours in the crowd scene.
Yeah.
When does that happen? When can that happen? Because, I mean, there's this Triumph comes out of the wormhole or whatever. He finds this Justice League. He meets them for the first time. They have this adventure. And at the end of the adventure, shake hands.
And white out.
White out. So, in other words, they cannot have been, not Triumph, not Booster Gold, who's supposed to be laid up in a hospital somewhere. Not that crowd scene has the Justice Leaguers that have quit. like Maxima and Captain Atom and Booster Gold. And also these Justice Leaguers who are just, you know, thinking of quitting are also there. Despero or Elrond, they're all there, but simultaneously they're here. And there's no moment where they are aware of Zero Hour and go deal with it. Because Triumph is looking for the big guns. He's looking for Superman. He's looking for... And Superman is at that meeting.
Yeah. He called.
He called everyone. He called
that meet.
So this doesn't quite... I'm going to call this... We haven't done it in a while, but it's hyper time.
It's hyper time.
So, again, where the main series does not quite connect with the books that are trying to fit in. A major problem with Zero Hour, which is also a rush job trying to fit those five, you know, one a week, basically, I think is the problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also desperately wanted Power Girl's pregnancy to be addressed in these books.
It's not even in there. I mean, it really feels like the three books, they don't feel within Zero Hour, except for that weird time anomaly with Triumph at the beginning. And the whiteout at the end.
And the dinosaurs in Central Park.
Oh, yeah. And dinosaurs. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Dinosaurs in Central Park. Other than these three things, nothing in there says Zero Hour.
There is a moment where Fire, it's in the second, it's in Task Force, but Fire says, I don't know what these time anomalies are because I haven't seen them. And I don't know who you are, Triumph, because I don't know who you, but I know Ice is dead. That's what I know. I'm grieving for my friend and sister. And that's where she goes after Arion. So she makes reference to it. There's this big crisis going on. And it's like nobody really needs Elongated Man, okay? So, but then the Martian Manhunter connects to that. And I mean, he's like one of the big guns. So yeah, so there's no reconciling that. And that happens a lot. And for Power Girl's pregnancy, I had to check. But I remember her becoming pregnant. So now I'm thinking, how long has she been pregnant? And she became mystically pregnant. Like, there's no father, or we don't know how it happened.
The Force is the father.
The Force is the father. And and she became pregnant in issue 52 while I was still reading. And that's 16 issues ago. So she's been pregnant for 16 months, reader time.
Oh, wow.
Reader time. And here there's no mention of it. She's not a member of the team anymore because she's one of the people that fell out after Ice's death or around that time. So it's not addressed here. So in Zero Hour itself, where she's in labor, it's just feeling like where do I have to go to know what's happening? And if I read the books that month, the Zero Hour tie-ins, I'm not going to find that information. So so that's that. That's what's not in the issue. What is in the issue? What did you think of this story?
It's a nice story arc to launch Triumph. That's what I thought.
Okay.
And that's what I think about these. I mean, it's a Triumph story. It's not a Zero Hour story. It's not. There's a time anomaly. But I mean, Back to the Future had a time anomaly and it's not in here. So, you know, time anomalies aren't exclusive to Zero Hour. I mean, there's always been time anomalies and there's always been going in the past or the future or whatever. I mean, for God's sakes, the Legionnaires did that all the time. So, I mean, it's not exclusive to Zero Hour.
So it's a little bit of a fake out in a way where this story about Triumph, the hero you never knew, founded the Justice League, would have happened either way. And he does survive beyond Zero Hour. He's in the new continuity, you know. So we're thinking, oh no, he's an anomalous character. He's like that bad girl that's running around. He's like Alpha Centauri. Yeah. He's from another timeline. And then he's going to disappear eventually if he's an anomaly. But he doesn't. He's real. So because it's Zero Hour, we think it's fake, but it's real. So it's a fake out. That's an interesting take to do with like a crossover story.
I mean, it's a good choice of timing. I mean, it's great timing if you're going to do that. I mean, if they were going to... you know, launch a book about a kid who can control dinosaurs in Central Park, this would be a great time to do it also, you know?
It's not too late.
But, you know, they could have done that. And that's what I think they did here. I mean, they just used the setting, which is Zero Hour. And we have all these anomalies. His story just basically falls smack dab in the middle of it, but has really nothing to do with the main story, with the main arc. It's a standalone story.
What I like is that as his story, let's say that's what we're looking at, his story, here it's better explained. Because we're in his thoughts the whole way through. It's always him telling the story in all three issues.
Yeah.
And the way it's told here is that now he realizes that all of these real heroes were forged in fire. They were forged in, you know, in tragedy or in a moment that gave them that responsibility. They did not set out to be heroes. They became heroes. And then they had no choice to become heroes. Whereas he, and we don't know his origin story exactly, but he's thinking about it and he realizes that he always wanted to be a hero. He, like, as soon as he had powers, he knew he wanted to become a superhero. But it's not, it wasn't dictated by circumstance other than his abilities. And I think he realizes he's a poser compared to the others.
Oh, wow.
That's what happens in the, like, early when he's, like, you know, waking up from being drowned almost by the plasma men. He's having these thoughts that they're the real deal and I'm not. And he's talking about the original Justice League of America, maybe, but I think it extends to like a growing respect for the current league. Those guys also have their value in that way. And he's the jerk who decided he wanted to be a superhero, showed up in a costume and said, hey, I'm going to lead the superhero team. And he doesn't deserve it. He's never earned it in the same way that Hal Jordan or Barry Allen or Black Canary did. It's a redemption arc where by the end, he's a bit less of a Guy Gardner.
That realization, you know, that I think it's a common trope to think that superheroes, all they do is fight, especially very powerful ones, because they can. A character like Triumph would be trying to punch his way out of everything. And basically, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to just punch his way out of everything until he realizes that he basically taught these aliens that fighting is a language. So that's how they talked or communicated.
I'm not sure how well that's done, but I really like that concept. I mean, at the same time, do these aliens not realize that when they drain a planet of its electromagnetic core, it's going to destroy the world?
Especially if you have intergalactic travel, you should know this science.
Seems to me. Although we don't know what the aliens look like. They're just energy beings. They're just like a sentience. So maybe they don't even realize that biological units are a thing. And the way they use their plasma men, the plasma men are drones that just attack electromagnetic. Like, they only attack Triumph because Triumph is an electromagnetic hero. So it's like they live on an electromagnetic spectrum.
Yeah.
Bioelectric beings are not a thing, maybe. That could be it. Again, it's not quite.
Except for eels.
They detect eels.
Yeah, they attack Triumph and they apparently attack eels.
And they disrupt pigeons. Yeah, we don't quite know. I like it's kind of like a neat little Doctor Who ending. That's what I liked about it.
Yeah. I kind of like that, you know, after the resolution and after we say, oh, finally, they reached this pinnacle of understanding and everybody's friends again, then it all disappears.
And that is the best whiteout page we've seen.
It is.
Because there's a real like deconstruction of the penciling. It's like, okay, now there's no inking. And so you kind of see it as suddenly a sketch. It's like something out of Animal Man. So that whiteout is probably the coolest of every issue we've seen.
It did have this Animal Man feel. It probably would have said something else if we saw like the penciling, you know, like this one panel where Martian Manhunter and Triumph are shaking hands. If we saw like the pencil sketch and then just the, you know, when you just like put the circles and the little X's to and the little balls to show where the shoulders are and stuff like that. It probably would have sent out a different message, like, you know, the deconstruction is a deconstruction of the actual medium or whatever. But how this was done with the panel just going to black and white, sketchy, and then just white, and even the panel just disappearing partially. It's beautiful and it's very well done.
I love it. I want to also give a few props to some of the character moments. I like how, for example, in the earlier issue, we had Triumph kind of giving terrible nicknames to everyone because he hated them. So like Captain Rubber or, he called Crimson Fox Claw's chick or something. But he did that in his mind. Here, Crimson Fox does the same thing where she calls him different names to like wake him up. And one of these, my favorite is Johnny Jawline. So I kind of like that as it's a better name than Triumph, personally. I like that. And they keep exploiting Tasmanian Devil as a comedy character. So although here he also has like the key to defeating the Plasma Men because he's got a Tasmanian Devil cry that I wasn't necessarily aware of. And the Plasma Men, Triumph learned in his first encounter with them that Black Canary's powers could disrupt them, turn them into goo. And so this works here as well. They use a bit of teamwork to get rid of the Plasma Men so they can finally go after the proper aliens. But they do play him as comedy. And when Triumph says, hey, remember you were telling me your origin? It wasn't just a joke. It had a plot purpose. And then Taz says, yes, soon to be a Dell paperback. I love that. I love that. So again, a bit of wahaha in there. I think the Justice League could have used a bit more of that across the board. You know, in its last 3 years post Giffen and DeMatteis and all that. Are there Justice Leaguers? Here's what's left of the team. Who's going to survive to an issue number zero? Are there characters here that you would absolutely want to see go forward in the zero issues when we cover them?
Fire has always been one of my favorites.
Cool.
Of course, Martian Manhunter I love also. I'm thinking maybe Elongated Man, but the rest probably don't follow through. I don't think Crimson Fox goes further than this. I don't think so.
Okay.
Or Tasmanian Devil. I really doubt it. Elrond probably should have stayed Elrond and probably should have stopped earlier. So I don't think he's going to go over also.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Because it's not like they're not given an out here. So my one last point is about the other blue and gold character that I referenced earlier.
Yes, yes. Who is it? Is it the Guardian?
No.
Is it?
It's not a DC character. Like Triumph, they did a miniseries, you know, a few dozen appearances, even through the New 52, sometimes you'll see Triumph somewhere, but they didn't really do anything with him. Not compared to his Marvel clone, the Sentry.
The Sentry, yes.
So the Sentry is less blue and gold and more gold and blue. It's just like a reverse of the costume in many ways, but he's also the big Marvel hero that's been there all along and you never knew existed. He's been active since the 40s and nobody remembers him. And that, so he was introduced in 2000. It just nobody ever remembered him. It was a thing where something happened that people forgot who he was and he forgot who he was. And he was like living as like some older man. And then I guess he could turn back into the Sentry or something. And they even published comics that are quite fun where you see the Sentry in the Golden Age, in the Silver Age, in the 70s, and they do like a pastiche of the styles of that era. I thought those comics were pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
And then he became like a major Avenger, and he's basically Marvel's Superman. He's like way overpowered. He's also the hero from the beginning that nobody remembers, and he's kind of looks the same. So I got to think there's a link there where somebody said, well, let's just, nobody remembers Triumph for real. So somebody at Marvel just maybe had that same idea or vaguely remembered Triumph, or it's a coincidence. I don't know.
It's very similar.
But they did a lot more with him. The Sentry was a big deal. A lot of people hated him, but at least there was a reaction. Whereas Triumph, let's say the pandemic's over and we do what we once did with Invasion and go to the comic shop during comic book day and interview people. It's like, what do you think of Triumph? Nobody's going to...
Oh, we got to... If we can, we got to...
Nobody's going to remember Triumph, which proves the point that he's the hero that was unremembered. He's just the Sentry. And I think the Sentry kind of became important enough that now if you brought back Triumph, people would say, oh, you're just ripping off the Sentry.
They probably would.
Final thoughts?
You know what? It's a cool Triumph story. It's it was great to get to know the superhero that I never knew I forgot. Unfortunately, I really feel that this is not a 0 hour story. I read three kind of cool comic books with a lot of characters and some characters I do like, and you know, some cool moments where we have like these old Justice Leaguers and the new Justice Leaguers, and we have all this stuff going on, but it just doesn't feel like a 0 hour story.
Or even a Justice League story in a way. Like, I like that first chapter where we see the original Justice League of America. That felt more. But the fact that 0 hours more or less trying to fix problems, and one of those problems that is that the team books are really, really faltering, means that we're getting terrible versions of the big teams in the crossover event. It's like, this should be a high point. This should be like a big moment, and we should be happy and grateful that the Justice League are participating, but that's the Justice League, and those are the Titans, and that's the Outsiders. It's like, ugh, really?
Yeah.
They're all on their way out, and just feels like a bit desperate. It feels defeatist. We're saying, oh, you know what? These teams are so terrible. Let's just reboot everything. Rather than have them be like major players in the crossover event.
Sometimes you just gotta burn it down and start over.
And yet, I don't think they quite manage it. Okay, well, we'll take another small break. And when we come back, Letters Lost in Time.
Letters Lost in Time.
Much like Triumph.
Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast. A new monthly show chronicling the adventures of the JLI era by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. We'll be going issue by issue, in release order, tackling the core Justice League title, Justice League Europe, and the quarterly book. Along the way, we'll take time out for special episodes covering various spin-offs, cartoon appearances, the infamous TV pilot, and much more. So join me in an ever-changing roster of guest hosts as we celebrate your favorite JLI members, such as...
Martian Manhunter.
Batman.
Dr. Fate.
Black Canary.
Fire.
Ice.
Maxwell Lord.
Oberon.
Captain Marvel.
Rocket Red.
Captain Atom.
Mr. Miracle.
Guy Gardner.
Booster Gold.
Blue Beetle.
Nort.
And many, many more. Justice League International, Bwahaha Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Want to make something of it?
Letters Lost in Time!
Letters Lost in Time! Maybe Triumph had them, but we didn't know.
Yes, our letter carrier is Triumph. And finally, the letters are here. Excerpts from your comments on our coverage of Action Comics, Team Titans, and Damage, which also took us into New Titans territory. So we badmouthed the Titans of this era a lot. But Tom Paneris gives us more context. It's interesting. He says the Jansen Jimenez run on Team Titans is a book that had a lot of potential, but a faulty execution that was plagued by the dissonance between what the writers wanted to do and the fact that DC wanted their own version of X-Force. At least my friend and I got our names in the letter column on this one. According to both Jimenez and Jensen, they had a solid year's worth of stories plotted out and detailed when they came on, but DC editorial nixed that and made them compress it all in about 4 or 5 issues. They seem to look upon their time on the title fondly, at least, in that it was a learning experience for a couple of greenies. Now, as for the New Titans, Changeling's transformations are part of a long-running subplot that began about a year prior. He'd stolen Steve Dayton's Mento helmet as a way to possibly help bring Cyborg back from a vegetative state, and the Brotherhood of Evil used it on him. It fried his brain to the point where he started morphing into ghastly creatures and other horrors. He spent much of that time moping around and then encountered the evil version of Raven, who was wearing some dominatrix-style outfit made of leather straps and would kiss her victims so she could implant within them a Trigon seed. Changeling gets kissed in issue 114, and within the next 6 months, he's completely evil. He gets better by the time the series is canceled in late 1995. Wow. I feel like I read this, and Diablo Frank also gave us like a rundown of things happening in Titans that I won't be able to read entirely. It just makes me feel like I dodged so many bullets by not reading Teen Titans, New Titans, what Titan books in this era.
It kind of feels like you were in bullet time and you were... And you were dodging bullets.
Same with Justice League, I guess. Tim Price says, I did enjoy these new Titans during the Titans Hunt arc, which lasted for over a year. But once that was over and the old New Titans were rescued, it started to fall apart. Those characters worked for a specific mission, but not for an ongoing series. But I did like that Action Comics that we also covered. The artwork was great and the alternate Kents were fun to see. Lois at the end was surprisingly poignant. Let's look at some of Diablo Frank here. He swung by like a few times until he was done, I think four or five times. So I'll grab some of the highlights. About Damage. Damage came out when I was working overnight security, he says, which meant I had the money and the free time and the gaping hole of existential despair that I tried to fill with more comics bought every week than at any other point in my life. I was looking for something new to try, and the lady from the comic shop recommended Damage. So I asked her to put it on my pull list until further notice. I remember its solicitation copy being tantalizing with some big secret about his parentage that would rock the DC universe, but I wasn't yet invested in said universe. The first cover was lame and the story was very much off-brand Peter Parker, but I thought it would be rude to dismiss her suggestion after just one issue. The storytelling was decompressed for its time and very action-oriented, so the first half dozen issues take place over the span of a few days with few revelations to show for it. I thought Bill Merriman was one of the best artists DC had at the time, and the costume designs were nifty. It had a very 90s aesthetic, but based more in the real world clothing and hairstyles of the time, not just chromium age nonsense. That said, Tom Joyner's scripts were very much a Liefeldian hamster wheel, constantly adding new characters and conflicts without advancing or deepening any aspect of the book. I hung on until the New Titans appearance in number 6, but I was rapidly tiring of that book as well. So he talks about that. Teen Titans was an early example of DC trying to be Marvel without understanding what Marvel was. Drawn by DC's answer to Gene Colan, but written like the many loves of Dobie Gillis to near Dada-esque effect. He's talking about the 60s. Version.
Yeah, yeah.
The new Teen Titans was Marvel talent who understood the formula, doing arguably the best knockoff of Claremont Byrne's X-Men, but applied to milquetoast DC types that would never be as compelling as the OG. I read the book occasionally beginning in 1982 due to a combination of modest regional distribution and circumstantial interest. Because it was typically newsstand dependent, the Baxter experiment was wildly unsuccessful with me, and I wasn't satisfied with the crumbs of Tales of the Teen Titans and Teen Titans Spotlight. By the late 80s, the Titans' time had passed again, washed away by a raft of revisions of DC icons often produced by the very people that once charted their course. Marv Wolfman suffered his infamous post-crisis writer's block, where he damned well should have quit Titans, but instead held them in a death grip. The Titans Hunt storyline was nearly a year, and the big twist was spoiled on the cover of number 78, but the art was fantastic, and there was so much going on. The X titles were still in the midst of Mutant Genesis, and it was an extremely exciting time for comics. I'd largely neglected DC Comics for years, but this Titans book seemed to have the same energy as Marvel's titles of that summer, and for the first time ever, I began to consistently buy each issue of Titans. The old New Titans were tired as f***. So I embraced all the dynamic and mysterious Titans Hunters. I still hadn't read Judas Contract, so I cheered for Deathstroke, Leading Panther, Phantasm, and Baby Wildebeest. The New Titans struggled for an identity after the hunt ended, and he goes into a lot more detail. Like I said, just like pages. Pages and pages. You can see them at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
I mean, at the end of this, we could probably just put a novel together or a wiki.
At least a wiki. Captain Entropy says, ironically, when I reread both the Titans stories and the 80s X-Men that I loved as a kid, I still enjoy them, but I roll my eyes at the angst like a grumpy old man. And I agree with that. I think a lot of these comics, there's a nostalgic value. But like to me, like, okay, let's reread some of the X-Men that I read when I was a kid. And I see the quality and I like the art and, you know, I see what I liked in that. But it's like, how about we edit out half the dialogue? These yeah. things are so wordy, you know, but we got to take them for what they were at that time, you know.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And also the you know, who they're trying to reach, the audience that's reading. I mean, you have to talk to them specifically. I mean, reading stuff that I read when I was a kid, often I'm just like, oh, my God, this is so dark or so angsty or so dumb. But, you know, I judge myself. I don't judge the art.
Okay, Michael Bailey talks about Action Comics. He says the Action Comics crossover is easily the most forgettable because I have read it at least 4 times now, and the only thing I remembered off the top of my head before hearing the synopsis was the bit with Lois at the end. Usually, I'm pretty good with this era of Superman, but there are certain bits and bobs that just slip right through my memory. Once you went over the issue, I mostly remembered it, which again still doesn't speak to how good or bad the story was. The bit with Lois at the end felt like she knew that this was the end and she knew that no one would probably ever hear this, but it's either to do what she knows best or just sit there and wait to die. It struck me as a very Lois thing to do. Or maybe she just believes that Clark and the other heroes will win in the end because they always do. It's a 50-50 shot. Good redemption. Then he says, in recent years, stories like this have led to a small existential crisis for me. When a timeline is reset, does that mean that all the people in that timeline died during whatever crisis was going on and that a new version of them exists in the new timeline? Or do they just blink into the new timeline when all is said and done? Going with that, did the Lois we see in this issue and have been following since Man of Steel, the good one, die here? And then the Lois we see after this is a new Lois with a similar backstory. Or did this Lois go from standing on the rooftop, reporting on the end of everything, to just living your life again and thinking, well, I just dodged a major bullet? That is not a question we can answer easily.
No, it's many a question we can't answer easily.
It depends, Michael. Because, it depends. Yeah. Crisis on Infinite Earths. Yes, there is a new Lois Lane post-crisis. And the original Lois Lane no longer exists. Or she's shunted off to a, like later on, we might say there's an Earth, original Earth 1 somewhere out there. But yeah. With Zero Hour, we'll see how that works out. But it's more like there's still just one Earth and history's been rewritten. So she should remember this moment if it happened in this history. But then there might be different details in her life and she's just like, suddenly, maybe you remember your past differently because it's just the one timeline.
Yeah.
So it's the same Lois, I believe, if we're just talking about Lois, it's the same Lois from Man of Steel on through to Flashpoint, basically. So new 52, new Lois. Okay. But Infinite Crisis, more of a reset for Earth 1, for Prime Earth. There's just like, suddenly there's more Earths or whatever. I don't think Lois is rebooted. So I think Lois has only been rebooted twice because then Rebirth is just Lois again from the original timeline, right? Anyway, that's what I believe, but it's all a...
Yeah, well, to me, your guess is as good as mine.
On that note, on that esoteric note, we have to mention that the Fire and Water Podcast Network has a Patreon page. So if you like our content, please think about making a one-time or monthly donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Get on the zero list at patreon.com/FWPodcast. Just like these folks did, our patron supporters, specific to Zero Hour, they are going to escape the cataclysmic time wave that's coming from both ends of history. That's the only way to survive Zero Hour is to get on this list. So Jim Bao has been saved from witnessing the birth of the Endless. David Capoon's been saved from the Justice League's Parisian embassy and its leaky roof. Michael Bailey has been saved from the Space Museum before they could turn him into an exhibit. And Diablo Frank has been saved from Big Tizzle, where the neighbors were complaining about his solidity. A reminder that you can leave us comments at fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also follow Fire and Water's Facebook page or on Twitter. The account is FW Podcast. You can also listen to the show on Spotify. Maybe you already are. But that's it for us, Bass.
And that was so quick and so long-winded. I think it's a power.
Next time on Zero Hour Strikes, Catwoman and Anima.